to Small Town News. I'm Keith.
I'm George.
And I'm Craig.
And what we do each session is reread small town newspaper articles from small town newspapers somewhere across the United States. We are reading these articles for the first time. They are provided to us by the wonderfully talented but the woefully underpaid Dr. Saxon.
Boom!
From those articles, we might take a character, a situation, maybe just a singular word, and we're going to improvise stories around it. We're just trying to make big stories out of small town news. Where's Neil?
Well, he's not here, and so we're bereft.
Which, you know what that means. That means two-parter, baby.
That's right. No internal editing as this we go.
We have run amok for the last hour and a half already.
We've already got four porch chats, or maybe just an episode, talking about all kinds of randomness.
So look forward to part two of wherever the hell we are this week, coming soon.
Speaking of, we have an email from Dr. Jess, and there is a picture, and one's eye is drawn immediately to what animal, Craig?
You're looking at that ass.
That's a donkey.
No, see, I don't even look at the donkey. I just notice a donkey. What do you notice first?
Is that a buffalo?
I think it's a camel.
There's two camels.
Yeah. Wait, two camels?
Two camels.
Oh, it's got the one hump.
Y'all notice the donkey first? I'm not sure what it says about us, but I went straight to the camel.
I'm more of an ass man. I don't know what to tell you.
I'm more of a hump guy. I guess. I don't know what that means.
Neil! Wait, where's the... Oh, there's the third camel.
That's what you have in your Tinder
profile.
Yeah, okay.
There's two camels.
It's a black and white
photo.
No,
there are three.
Yeah, it's a black and white photo. The third camel was kind of blending in with the background.
I thought that the camel going into the train car was the same camel on the ramp. I didn't notice this. I thought that was all one animal. Didn't notice the second head coming out.
Do you think it was a camel train?
Yeah, a camel train.
Okay, so I have an unspoken rule.
Get aboard the camel train.
The moment you invoke camel train is the moment I'm going to take charge and we're going to move forward.
One hump or two.
That's why we move forward. We are in Spearfish, South Dakota. I'm going to say that's my favorite name of a town I've done in a long time. Spearfish.
Well, especially, I mean, there's not an ocean in South Dakota. So I guess there's lakes. Were you spearfish?
Yes. No oceans.
No oceans.
I don't think it's a verb. I'm going to spearfish.
It's not a command.
Yeah.
Spearfish. Spearfish. Well, you hope it's not a type of fish. You'd hate to be that fish.
No, you're spearing other fish.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes more
like
sense.
Like a swordfish.
Okay.
Boom.
Swordfish, swords, other fish.
But a spearfish. That's got to be better than a swordfish.
Huh? Like a longer appendage. Just gets picked up and thrown.
Like a javelin.
It goes longer distance. Yeah,
javelin
for sure.
Fish.
Javelin fish.
Well, we are with the Black Hills Pioneer.
The Black Hills of South Dakota are gorgeous.
So I've never been there.
Why are they called the Black Hills?
Because they're black.
The black dirt?
Yeah.
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 Until you find the gold, right?
No, I mean, no.
Black Hills gold.
Yes,
has
there is.
Has South Dakota ever had a gold rush?
It's ripe for one. Because I've heard of Black Hills Gold, like on
George's
QVC.
Been buying property for years.
Back on QVC,
according to
the day.
Spectator Weekly, South Dakota is primed for a gold rush.
So you better saddle up your donkey or camel, as it were, and head on down to the Black Hills.
Grab your bindle.
And your ex.
Founded in 1876 and home to 11,700 residences, Spearfish is located in western South Dakota, just a few miles from the Wyoming border. The town is on the northern edge of the Black Hills National Forest and is 20 miles west of Sturgis, home of the annual Sturgis Bike Rally.
Oh, you know what that is. It was a lot of bad press. Huh? Smash Mouth had a big concert during COVID, right? Because they still did that bike rally that had tens of thousands of people there.
Smash Mouth did the Sturgis bike rally?
Yeah, in the middle of COVID.
Wait, and it was the bad mouth that Smash Mouth performed a concert, or did they do something else there that was worse?
Oh, it was a super spreader. So they had it anyway, like in the middle of COVID.
Somebody once told me the world is gonna roll me. I ain't the sharpest tool in the shed.
There you go.
Golly, and I keep the lyrics keep applying.
Yeah, you know it.
She was looking kind of dumb with her finger and a thumb in the shape of an L on their foreheads. Okay, well, Spearfish's annual name was Queen City, and Queen City remains the town's nickname. The Spearfish Canyon is just outside of town. When architect Frank Lloyd Wright visited in 1935, he said the area was, quote, unique and unparalleled elsewhere in our country. And he wondered, how is it that I've heard so little of this miracle, and we, towards the Atlantic, have heard so much of the Grand Canyon when this is even more miraculous?
What was it, though, that was miraculous about it? Just the
the Smash Mouth concert.
Yeah. Yeah, start coming and they don't stop coming. Bend to the rules and Frank Lloyd loves it.
I mean, is the Spearfish Canyon as big as the Grand Canyon?
Probably it's not, right? No, but you've got the Badlands around there too.
Okay.
And the Badlands, of course, are not as big as the Grand Canyon, but they do go on for miles. It's a beautiful vista.
So if it wasn't for the Grand Canyon, maybe this would be more popular.
Yeah.
Well, in 1874, okay, here's gold. In 1874, I knew it. Thank you, Jess, for validating my own passions. In 1874, gold was supposedly first discovered in the Spearfish area. However, in 1887, brothers Lewis and Ivan Thoen found a stone slab that claimed a party led by Ezra Kind discovered and minted for gold, or excuse me, mined for gold in Spearfish in 1833. The stone slab became known as the Thoen Stone, not Throwin Stone.
Thoen.
Thoen Stone. It was created by Ezra in 1834 after the other six men in his expedition had been killed. The sandstone slab is inscribed in cursive on both sides. That's got to be hard to write in cursive on a stone. Don't you usually write on a stone in like chisels?
Straight lines?
Yeah, with chisels. Can you imagine?
Yeah, well, you think about like the Roman days when they would do V's for U's.
That's why they would do it, because it was easier to do with a chisel, right? You're not doing cursive.
The years start coming and they don't stop coming, fed to the rules, and you hit the ground running.
The front side reads, quote, "Came to these hills in 1833, seven of us, De La Compte, Ezra Kind, G.W. Wood, T. Brown, R. Kent, William King, Indian Crow, all dead but me, Ezra Kind, killed by," and then in brackets it says Indians, "beyond the high hill, got our gold June 1834.
That's a humble brag.
You're writing all that in cursive on a stone.
On the front, right?
The inscription on the backside is much shorter. Quote, "Got all the gold we could carry. Our ponies all got by the Indians. I have lost my gun and nothing to eat, and Indians hunting me." Close quote.
Did it make sense not to live full front? Your brain gets smart, but your head gets dumb.
Let's see. Ezra died of unknown causes sometime after inscribing the stone. I'm probably guessing it's from
exhaustion.
From the people that were hunting him. He told us. You're saying exhaustion from the cursive? For years, the stone was thought to be a hoax. Lewis Thoen was a stonemason and was thought to have made the stone himself. In the 1950s, Frank Thompson researched the men listed on the Thoen Stone and found out that all of them had living relatives who claimed their ancestors had disappeared in South Dakota in the 1830s. A handwriting expert in the early 2000s claimed that the script on the stone did not match Lewis's. The Thoen Stone is currently in a museum in Deadwood. I can't believe that's a real name of a town. But it is a town 15 miles south of Spearfish. Visitors to Spearfish can view a replica of the 10-inch by 8-inch stone on a hill in Spearfish City Park. The town also hosts an annual run that passes by the replica. I'm even more impressed that he wrote all that in cursive on a stone that was 10 inches by 8 inches.
I'm impressed that there are handwriting experts for stone chiseling.
It doesn't look like Lewis's stone chiseling handwriting.
Yeah, not at all.
Cursive. Cursive stone chiseling handwriting.
You never know if you don't go. You never shine if you don't glow.
Oh.
I've already stretched it out.
You know, you're
a
rock star. It's about a stone.
Oh.
Keith, it's still there.
Get your game on. Go play.
All that glitters is gold.
Only shooting stars. Okay, good Lord. We owe royalties.
Spearfish Canyon is a deep and narrow gorge just south of town in the Black Hills National Forest. One of the many mammal species that live in the canyon is the yellow-bellied marmot, also known as the rock chuck.
Hey now, you're a rock chuck.
Get your game on.
Go.
Play?
No.
No.
What rhymes with chuck? Don't do it.
George, his face was so mischievous. That's the most pure joy and mischievous nature I've ever seen in George's eyes. Don't do it. These marmots live in colonies of 10 to 20 individuals and hibernate for 8 months each year. They are one of the few species of true hibernators. Animals in a true state of hibernation have body temperatures that drop to near ambient levels. Their heart and respiration levels also drastically slow. bears are not true hibernators.
Ooh.
Slam. Bear slam.
Yeah.
What are they if they're not true hibernators?
They're just in a
posers.
Deep, yeah.
Because their body temperatures don't drop to near ambient levels.
Nope. Yeah. And they're not in that deepest state of sleep. Oh. And also learned recently that while they are, air quote, hibernating, they sleep.
Aren't you supposed to sleep while hibernating?
I always just thought of hibernating as just being a big sleep, but there are dreams and sleeps that are happening inside of that as well.
So no. You thought they sleep, but you found out that they sleep.
Yes. Is that not making sense?
Yeah. So you were right?
I was right all along.
Yeah, you're right along.
Yellow-bellied marmots are a type of ground squirrel, and they are, quote, the heaviest members of the squirrel family. Groundhogs, another type of marmot which live east of the Mississippi, are more closely related to marmot species in Europe and Southeast Asia than they are to the yellow-bellied marmots of the Northern Rockies. The etymology of the word marmot is not clear. The word might be from the Gallo-Romance prefix marm, meaning to mumble or murmur, an example of onomatopoeia. But it might also come from the Latin phrase mos montanas, which means mountain mouse.
Well, I never thought of a groundhog as a type of squirrel.
It's like the reverse of a squirrel because it lives underground right. As opposed to in a tree.
Right, right.
It's a confused squirrel.
It's a tree hog.
It's a squirrel without aspirations. Y'all go ahead and climb that tree. I'll be down here on the ground.
You know what? No. That's the opposite, okay?
You think so?
What's a tree squirrel got to do but climb a tree? When you live underground, you got to dig that hole.
It all depends on whether you have a fear of heights.
Yeah, but there's more work involved. I think there's something more noble in a squirrel living underground. That is not a ridiculous statement to make.
Because they've got to dig the hole instead of just
there's
climb a
nobility
tree.
There's nobility in that.
Is it noble if he just finds a hole, though?
Yeah.
The coward's marmot way out.
No, but by that same token, what if the squirrel grew his own tree?
I don't think squirrels live that long. He does it for his great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grand-squirrels.
It's a legacy tree. He plants that acorn.
Someday, your children's 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 children's
can rise up out of the dirt and live in the trees like civilized squirrels.
And never shine if you don't glow. Joanna Meyer was born in Chicago in 1938 and raised in Spearfish. Her parents ran a touring passion play. And once Joanna was born, they decided to settle in Spearfish.
Y'all know what a passion play is?
Isn't that like about the crucifixion?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So
yes.
A touring one of those.
The Meyer family made their touring play a permanent fixture in town and named it the Black Hills Passion Play. Joanna made her stage debut at 5 weeks old in that play. As an adult,
she was playing Jesus.
She was one of the wise men.
The oldest one.
Yeah.
The oldest. They propped her up on a cane.
Her first words were myrrh. As an adult, she trained as an opera singer and became known as one of the premier singers of Richard Wagner's works. She spent 14 years as a lead soprano in the Metropolitan Opera. She also founded the School of Opera and Vocal Arts as part of the Black Hills State University Summer Institute of the Arts in Spearfish. That was long. And she served as its artistic director until 2008. She also continued to perform as Mary each summer in the Black Hills Passion Play until it closed in 2008. The Black Hills Passion Play ran for 70 years and was one of the longest running passion plays in America. Her father, Joseph Meyer, was a German immigrant. He Americanized a German passion play known as the Lewin Passion Play, which he claimed was first performed in, 1242. When the family settled in Spearfish, they built a 6,000-seat amphitheater for their production, and their play included soldiers on horseback, caravans of camels.
That's
coming off the train.
Yep.
And a release of pigeons, but no donkeys, apparently.
Hmm.
The family also claims that maybe like they ordered like 10 camels, but they only had 9. Or like, just sneak a donkey in there. Maybe they won't know. Notice. Hee-haw! Stop that.
Put these humps on this donkey.
He'll mature one day.
So did y'all notice that this lady, Johanna, she was first in the play at 5 weeks old, and then she played Mary when she was age 70.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah. I mean, that's a miracle.
Enjoy your time in Spearfish. All the marmots are sleeping right now, but maybe blasting Wagner's Ride of the Valkyries will unhibernate those little rock chucks. Thanks, Jess.
Noble creatures.
Those groundhogs. All right, here's the first article. Mothering all creatures, or trying to. No author listed. It's 11 p.m., and I'm sitting on the bathroom floor with a rumpled towel on my lap and a needleless plastic syringe in my hand. My other hand cradles... What is it cradle, Craig?
Baby rock chuck.
Okay. Keith, what do you think he's cradling?
I'm sorry, I'm stuck on needleless plastic syringe. So what is it? Oh, because you use it to feed. She's feeding an animal, probably she's feeding a ground squirrel.
Okay, these are good guesses. My other hand cradles a tiny orange and white spotted kitten.
Also known as a ground squirrel.
Exactly. Ground squirrel that hasn't tried hard enough. Her eyes are barely open, and her body is so frail in my palm, it feels like an autumn leaf, as if the slightest breeze could carry her away. She doesn't want to drink from the syringe, but it is the only way I can get milk into her belly. She's too weak to suck it from a tiny bottle.
Sorry, me and Craig just shared a terrible look.
There's other ways.
There's other ways. You're holding a syringe.
No. There's a more direct
method. Cat's not going to like it. It's going to make a mess. There's more than one way to fill a cat with milk.
Can we put that on a welcome mat?
There's more than one way to fill a cat with milk.
Put that on an embroidery thing, right? Like the
you know, cross stitch that goes over your door.
Yeah. she is too weak to suck it from the tiny bottle. Stop. The syringe.
Just keep going.
She's too weak to suck it from the tiny bottle.
Don't repeat it.
I'm trying to get a clean edit. She's too weak to suck it.
Stop from it. The You're tiny not going to get a clean edit. Just keep moving.
Maybe
I got to get my momentum going to finish the sentence.
Maybe if we all say it together.
She is too weak to suck it. That's the end of the sentence. No, she is too weak to suck it from the tiny bottle I bought at the farm supply store. She mews as I put the syringe tip in her mouth and squeeze out one tiny drop at a time. How many times has this same scenario repeated itself in this bathroom? I've never bottle fed a baby kitten before. So zero?
But, wait, okay, so you weren't asking that. That was part of the
article? That was part of the article. How many times has the same scenario repeated itself in the bathroom?
Well, maybe she might not be the only owner of that house.
Is there a community bathroom that everybody goes to feed kittens?
Well, what is she feeding if not kittens?
It's entirely possible that a previous owner fed a kitten in that bathroom. So one time my family, we were vacationing and we went to Gettysburg. See the battlefields and all that stuff. We were staying in this old historic house, and one of the claims of fame of this house we were staying in was a Confederate soldier from the battlefield, like made his way to the house, like crawled inside and died inside the house. And in the house, you can see, like in one of the rooms, the wood stained floor where he bled out. I mean, it's there. We're eating dinner in this room where this big old stains on the floor. Like, we're looking around, it's like, well, that's where the guy died.
It's a conscious choice not to clean that up.
And my mom made this realization. She was like, it's kind of weird to be vacationing in a house where someone died. Although, I guess if a house is old enough, I mean, chances are somebody's died in that house. So this weird exit.
Pass the potatoes.
Like, Yeah, if a house is old enough,
yeah,
someone's died in there.
Yeah.
So someone's died. If you're listening to this, chances are someone's died in your house.
It's true.
Might be where you're sitting right now.
Maybe not in your bathroom, though.
No, that's just for feeding kittens. You don't do anything else in the bathroom but feed.
People die in the bathroom.
I wonder how many kittens died in this bathroom. Is that where we're at? Oh,
kitten. I mean.
Well, if that happens, you clean up the stain there, right? I mean, you don't leave it there.
Well, it becomes a good talking point in 100 years' time.
Yeah. This is one of the many kittens.
You're an all-star. Get your game on.
Yeah. There's a milk stain on the floor.
Right. It curdled. It turned into cheese. Yes. We leave it.
So, and then you show that picture in the Airbnb photos.
Cross-species mothering is a gamble, even with a healthy, thriving baby. And yet, I stay late into the night or early in the morning, unable to walk away until I've gotten as much nourishment as I possibly can into their small bodies. My husband will tell you I do the same to him. Before we had kids...
All right, I'm interested again.
Okay. Before we had kids, I was constantly feeding him in the bathroom. No, I was constantly asking.
Don't would, build up my hope.
No,
like that.
He was too weak to suck it. So she was having to. Before we had kids, I was constantly asking him when and what he last ate. I know he is quite thankful that now two small children take the focus off his eating habits. Still, when the three of them head out for an adventure in town or to the pasture to check cows, I am often found chasing the pickup down the driveway, waving a bag of healthy snacks and a water bottle, just in case. It's gotten me thinking about what comes naturally. For the orphan babies in my care, a connection to their biological mother comes naturally. When I pet this little orange kitten's ears, as weak and sickly as she is, she starts to nuzzle and purr, looking for a nipple. In pursuit of a purpose-driven life,
okay.
I think we all...
I don't wanna...
Dive in, Keith.
But here we go. We cut to a construction site. It's lunchtime. The foreman approaches one of his workers. Hey there, Stan. It's lunchtime. I see you don't have a pail or anything.
Oh, Mr. Johnson, I didn't bring lunch today.
Oh, you didn't bring lunch?
No, I didn't bring any lunch.
Now, Stan, we worked hard this morning. We're going to work hard this afternoon. It's a construction site, after all. You need some sustenance.
Well, I know, but I had a healthy breakfast. I got my calories in this morning. I think I'm good.
I can't afford to have one on me. You know, I'm like the father of this work site, all right? So it's important to me that my entire family is well fed and taken care of and has the energy to keep going this afternoon. It's a business after all.
Oh, Mr. Johnson, I understand, but I'm trying to, you know, I'm hoping to work overtime, work through lunch, and I got Christmas coming up and I got all these kids I got to feed. And
that's all the more important, Stan, if you're trying to work extra hours here. I need to make sure you got sustenance. I'll tell you what. My wife, Mary, is here today. I think she can come over and help you out here in just a moment.
Does she bring sandwiches?
I'll bring her on away. Mary, come on over here.
Hi, Phil.
I got to tend to someone on the other side here. Stan here does not have lunch.
What?
So if you could just help him out, I'd appreciate it.
Oh, I'd love to, honey.
All right, I'll be back in a bit.
All right, thanks, boss. Mrs. Johnson, I was telling Mr. Johnson that I had a big breakfast, so I'm
Stan,
probably okay.
Stan.
Yes, ma'am.
You need to make sure that you have plenty of calories and food in your stomach to be able to work hard. You don't want to run out of energy halfway through the day.
I got a Snickers bar in the glove.
Let me just stroke your ears just a little bit.
There we go. No, Mrs. Johnson, I'm sorry. I'm not.
You'll relax.
I'm not comfortable with the way this feels.
Yeah, doesn't that feel nice? Just like a long stroke around your earlobe.
I haven't had this kind of personal attention and
look at you. You're already starting to relax into it. You're just like a little leaf. You could just blow away with the wind.
I need to work. I can't take all this time. I am enjoying it.
Yeah, good. You just keep relaxing. I'm not going to lie. My nipples aren't what they used to be.
Oh, miss. Excuse me, ma'am. No, I'm not so relaxed that that's going to go right by me. I'm not.
Whoa, what's going on over here?
Oh, Mr. Johnson, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Please cover up, ma'am.
What are you doing with my wife, Mary?
Not at all. No, I was, I'm not sure. I'm not sure where she was going with it.
Several minutes, I come back and you're not even latched on.
What?
I mean, how long does this take?
He's a tough one. I've relaxed him so much, he's almost too weak.
We've got 10 minutes left into lunch here, okay? You got to get well fed, okay? And how are you going to do that?
Hold on. No, hold on.
Yeah?
Hold on. Mr. Johnson.
Hi.
Mrs. Johnson.
Stan.
Now that we figured out who everybody is, I'd still have to say, not comfortable with what I think you're suggesting.
Well, sit down.
I do mean physically. I mean emotionally.
So Mary, why don't you sit down, Stan? You can sit in Mary's lap. I mean,
let me make sure I understand. You are telling me that I need to, that your wife,
Mary,
is, right? Mary, Mrs. Johnson wants to breastfeed me?
I don't, it's not that I want to. It's more of a calling.
No, see,
more of a need.
See, I've got lots of reasons why this is not a good idea. The fact that I'm a grown man, this is a woman of advanced age. I'm not interested.
Are you saying that her milk isn't fresh enough for
I'm
you?
I'm guessing.
You're oh,
I don't
my
know.
God.
Look, but that's not even the point.
No, Stan. Let's under.
Not the point.
No, you listen.
It could be the best milk
not,
in the world.
It is not the point.
I don't mean to. I don't mean to.
It is the
insult
best
you.
Milk in the world.
No,
only
I
one way
okay,
to find out.
Let's say I believe that.
Okay.
I don't want to find
you
out.
Should
no.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry. I've spilled a little bit on the work site here.
Oh my God. Waste not, want not.
There's a little bit of a mess down there.
Stan.
Want not. Waste all you want. What not?
No, Stan.
If you're afraid of my nipples, just lick a little bit up off the ground.
Yeah,
there.
Give
just,
it a taste. Maybe you'll like
little,
it.
Give a little kitten lap.
No, that doesn't help. The idea of a kitten lap. No.
You know, Stan,
I'm not,
Stan, let me.
Mr. Johnson.
No. Stan, you got some hang-ups here. Okay? All right?
I do.
I had a feeling this might have happened. This was going to happen here. That's why I walked away for a bit there. I made a phone call. Okay. Mary, you can go. You can
what?
Go now. You can go now. It's okay. Don't take it anything personal.
Sure.
Hey, go check on the other side of the work site. There might be some other boys who didn't bring lunch.
I could flip my nipples.
It's okay. Go ask around. Go ask around.
Boys, anybody want a nipple?
There you go. Okay. Now, she'll be okay. Don't worry about Mary.
God.
Okay. This isn't her first rodeo. While I was gone, I made a phone call here since I thought you might have problems with Mary. Sometimes the men do. I called your mom. Okay, so your mom here, I believe, Angeline, she is here, and
hey, Stan, what's good? How are you,
mom,
baby?
Mom, I don't know how you got mixed up with this, folks, but
well, everybody's got an emergency contact, and you know, not having a lunch is certainly an emergency in my book. So I figured, you know, you're definitely more comfortable because you were breastfed as a child, right, Miss Angeline?
Well, of course I was, and so was Stan.
As a child.
I heard all about the problem here from Mr. Johnson.
So you understand then what's going on?
I do, it's awkward.
Can you talk to him?
Well, we've talked extensively, but I understand that you need to eat something, and I also understand that it's awkward for you to drink your mom's milk, right? So
yes.
So I understand that. So, baby,
Americans got hang-ups.
I made you this ham and cheese sandwich.
Okay, thank you.
And then I balled it up, and now it's neatly tucked underneath my nipples. And so you just need to put your head down on my lap and eat that sandwich from underneath my breasts.
That's a compromise.
Mom.
Clearly. It's a good sandwich.
Mom.
I cut the crust off.
No, that's nice, but doesn't.
No, I was talking about my nipples.
God. All right, we got 4 minutes left on this lunch here. Need you to dig in there, Stan.
Cut the crust off your nipples.
That's an end scene.
Nobody once fed me a sandwich from a nipple. Spearfish Restore Rehomes Piece of Deadwood History by J.C. Conrad Pearson. A mirror was recently donated to the Spearfish Habitat Restore, and after an investigation into its origin, it will find its way back to Deadwood. The story starts earlier this month, as on September 3rd, the Spearfish Habitat Restore received the 6-foot-tall, 3-foot-wide, gold-leaf, hand-beveled antique mirror that hung in the historic Franklin Hotel in Deadwood until it was sold at auction in 2006. Habitat Restore manager Chad Davis contacted the Deadwood Historic Preservation Office and connected with city archivist Mike Rung, who went to the store, photographed the mirror, and consulted with Historic Preservation Officer Kevin Kuchenbecker. Kuchenbecker called Carolyn Weber, Executive Director of Deadwood History.
Kockenbacher, I think is what it is, yeah.
Kevin Kockenbacher called Carolyn Weber, Executive Director of Deadwood History, Inc., DHI.
There's a lot of people being called about this.
Yeah.
Like, we got? How many experts have we got in this town about
this
mirrors?
This is an old mirror, okay? All hands on deck.
I got to call some people. I got to call everyone.
guys, I saw myself in it.
What?
Yeah.
Who else saw themselves in it? Call someone else. through the years.
See if they see themselves. Get over here quick.
We need to make sure nobody's a vampire.
DHI was interested in adding the mirror to the organization's collection. When the donation came into the Habitat Restore, the donor told Chad that the mirror was purchased at the historic Franklin Hotel auction in 2006. This type of item is not something the Restore typically receives.
Wait. Restore is like a Habitat store,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So somebody bought that in an auction and then later just donated it to the humanity.
Yeah. Like there are plenty of habitats in the world.
Right. This isn't a habitat for tiny little kittens.
This is for humanity.
The habitat for kittens might be like a bathroom.
Yeah.
This is habitat for humanity.
It depends. Are you feeding the kittens in there?
There's also mirrors in that habitat, though.
Maybe.
Maybe not famous ones.
I'm not She's Fingerkins.
Is this a famous mirror? A famous person saw the reflection in this mirror?
So a piece of... Okay, like you just said an interesting thing that brought something to my mind. So you said like a famous person once saw the reflection in this.
Yeah.
Like, would that be enough of an... Like, let's say it was someone like, let's say JFK. JFK used this mirror. Like, is there intrinsic value in that?
Well, it's like... Like in our town of New Bern, there's a house that supposedly George Washington slept in one night, right?
Yes.
On his southern tour.
Yes.
And that's enough to make a big plaque about it and preserve the house and everything else. So mm-hmm. I guess if there was a mirror he looked at himself in, they'd be like, ooh, keep the mirror. Maybe he'll come back. Maybe it's...
Let me just be frank and honest. So do you think that makes that house interesting, that George Washington stayed there one night?
I mean, I guess of all the people who stayed there one night, it's the one person they remember. There probably were lots of people that stayed there, right? Well, of course.
But I mean, I think it makes it interesting. I think that's what makes, when you go into a historic building or home, that's what makes it interesting, is you're in the place where they lived. You're seeing the things they used.
Cut to that house on a tour. All right. So if you come right in here, we have the, this is the room. This is the bedroom where President Washington stayed a night on his southern tour.
Oh, wow.
Right. And that over there, that's the bed that he slept in.
Oh, did he sleep in that bed?
He did. He did. And if you'd like to just take a moment and look at it, I've got something I've got to take care of at the entrance here. I'll be right back with you folks, okay?
All right.
Then we'll resume the tour. Just one moment. I'll be right back.
Okay. I'm going to lay down in the bed real quick. Get a picture.
Get in the bed,
okay,
for sure.
Okay. How would George Washington lay in a bed?
Well, let's see. He had bad teeth and he was kind of short. No, okay. He was tall.
To
stretch
tall?
Out.
No, that was Abe Lincoln. No, quick. We don't have so much time.
He probably suffered from diarrhea from the food that he ate. So he was probably curled up in a ball.
Yeah,
it was curled up in a ball.
Okay. So I'm just going to, my stomach. There you go. My teeth. Oh,
yeah, there you go. Hold your.
Whoa. Gentlemen.
What?
Get off of the bed.
Get off
of the bed.
Click.
No.
Get off of the bed. I got my picture.
I told you. This is the bed. Back across the rope.
Don't get on the bed.
Come, look, you see this velvet rope. You know not to cross it.
I thought that was VIP.
Do I have to tell you not to eat the daisies?
Okay. I'm sorry.
I'm confused. Was this the velvet rope that George Washington
used? No. This is the velvet rope we put up to keep people like you on the other side of it.
Okay.
Now, that's the bed he slept in. It's very old.
You're right. I'm sorry. We didn't know. It wasn't clear. I apologize. Just put my name on the ledger, and we'll just move on to the next room.
The ledger?
Well, yeah. I mean, you've got a list of everybody that slept in this bed, right?
Well, one person, just President.
Oh, I mean, you mean to tell me President only George Washington used
He's
this bed?
He's the only one we care about, sir.
Who slept in it before George Washington?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, that's insensitive. Hey, I might become famous later, so.
Are you famous?
Not yet, but I might be. So,
well, if that happens, call me and we'll write your name on the headboard.
Get in on the ground floor.
And who built this bed? Of course, they got on it and tried it out too.
Of course.
Right, but they weren't president of the United States. Look.
You don't know
This house has been preserved because of that. And the next feature, I don't want to argue with you. I'm just going to take you to the bed, to the bathroom.
Okay.
Let me just take you to the bathroom.
Just bear in mind, wherever the ledger is, might want to put my name down.
Okay.
That's the last I'll
noted.
Say about it. That's
noted.
The last I'll say.
Don't even need to know your name because that's probably not going to happen. Let's go in this bathroom.
Reynolds.
Now, you just look in the bathroom. Notice the velvet rope.
Okay. Oh, wow. So
is this
the velvet rope that George Washington used?
No. We put it up later.
Where's the
toilet
one he used?
This velvet rope kept George Washington out of this room and kept him in the other room.
Sir, this is the toilet that Theodore Roosevelt used when he came through to see the place that George Washington slept. This toilet right here.
So his butt sat on this seat?
It did, and he was a known hunter and meat eater. He sat on that toilet, actually, for a number of hours.
Wow.
Yes.
How bad did it smell?
We don't.
Does it
we
still smell?
Can I open it? Is it still in there?
Yeah, Teddy, put your head in there.
No. Do not
Teddy,
touch.
Put your head
I'm
in
so
there.
Sorry.
Is that a phone ringing on the other side of the house?
I'll be right back.
Okay.
Let me just go get that.
Okay.
Just
all right.
Stay on this side of the rope.
Get the camera in.
All right.
Got it.
I'll be back in a moment.
Okay. We'll see you in a bit. Okay.
Teddy,
pants are off.
What kind of toilet paper do you think he had?
Let me think about that as I sit on this toilet.
It's probably rough, right?
Gosh, it's kind of cold.
Do you have to go
up now?
Probably you should go just to get the feeling.
Oh God! I mean, it's one thing to say you sat on the toilet that Teddy Roosevelt was on, but
go right.
I'm gonna try to make something happen here. Take a picture. Take a picture now. Take it out.
Whoa, sir! No, do not. Did you? Is that? Do I smell? Oh my God!
Where's the ledger?
It's in your hand. I've made a terrible mistake. I thought it was toilet paper.
No.
Wait, what?
Wait, the ledger that has Teddy Roosevelt's name on it?
Yeah, I thought it was toilet paper. It seemed kind of coarse, especially because it had a cover on it. I've never seen toilet paper.
Colonel Sanders also sat on this toilet. That was also in the ledger. Did you wipe your...
I might
have. With the ledger?
I thought it was fancy.
Just, if you could pull up your pants, we're almost done with the tour. I can't even believe this.
I didn't realize that presidents had book covers for their toilet paper.
It was olden times.
Can I know you're not going to put my name in the ledger, but just to put things in context, when Elvis Presley died on the toilet.
Yes, that was not here.
You know they regretted flushing it afterwards. I mean, that's history that he laid.
Are you suggesting that we not flush the toilet?
I got big plans.
You're saying we're going to want to preserve your stool?
Let me get one more picture. Stand up a little bit.
Okay.
What? Oh, God.
Okay. Click. Okay, there you go. So
that
I'm just saying, okay, I got all kinds of ideas. You can really make some money under one roof. The bed George Washington slept in. The toilet seat that Teddy Roosevelt sat on. The piece of shit that was laid by Reynolds McCarthy.
That's end of scene. During that scene, I stepped out of my head for a minute and realized something I'd never had to think about in my entire life. When Elvis died on a toilet, somebody did have to flush it.
Oh, somebody I've had to clean
somebody
him up.
Had
about
that. To flush it.
That was a decision that somebody made. They flushed the
they
toilet.
Flushed, or they didn't, and they kept it.
Somebody had to flush it.
There is no
or
way.
Or they kept it.
No, there is no way that someone kept it and they have not capitalized on it.
I don't think we understand how popular Elvis was.
Even if somebody kept the poop, there's no way somebody let a rancid toilet sit for 50 years.
Well, they had to eventually clean it, but the person that cleaned it might have kept the poop.
It's entirely possible that the person who discovered Elvis in the bathroom dead.
Maybe he didn't poop.
Well, no, they might have been of honorable and be like, we need to
notify his next of kin and give it to Priscilla.
Isn't it true that, what a terrible conversation. I'm so sorry. But here we go.
You void your bowels when you die.
Yeah, exactly. So okay. Everybody, yeah, any famous person that's died,
look, someone
had the opportunity.
Someone would buy Elvis's last poop for a lot of money.
Any celebrity that's died. Someone would
for
buy
a lot
their,
of money.
Their
you might hide
people
it in a
are
drawer.
Buying TikTok stars' farts and bags,
bathwater.
Yeah, they're going to buy a famous person's last poop.
Absolutely.
So here's how much would you pay for Elvis's last poop?
$0.
Well, no, I'm not my interest.
But how much do you think you can buy for it as an investment?
There would
so
be
you're
a
buying it
war.
To then resell it and market
there would
it.
Be a bidding war. So getting back to the original story, I'm absolutely certain that I've talked about this before. I don't know if it was on the podcast, but certainly to y'all. But one time I was in New York, I went to McSwirley's, mm-hmm. one of the oldest bars in our entire country, and they have a plaque that is above one of their urinals. Or maybe I was just told. Either way, but their urinal, there's the original urinal from when it first opened, and Teddy Roosevelt pissed in that urinal.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I have pissed in the same urinal that Teddy Roosevelt did, and that's kind of what I thought about with that first article. I was like, it's a weird thing to kind of feel, I guess, good about, but I kind of like being able to say I used the same urinal that Teddy Roosevelt used.
I love where y'all took, that's where you needed to take that story with the bed, because who doesn't want to do that? When you're on these tours, you never get a moment to do it. Like you go through Tron Palace and you want to go on the other side of the rope, but you can't do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it, because I think that is everyone's base reaction to something like that.
Yeah.
Well, I want to do it too.
You want to share that.
Yeah.
Have y'all ever shared a urinal with someone famous?
I mean, you got plans.
I got plans. I'm going places.
That's right.
I stood next to the drummer from Ben Folds 5 in a urinal. That's the closest I ever came to it.
What'd you say?
Hey, man.
You're not supposed to talk in a bathroom. Is that what he said?
The older I get, the more people do it. That is a thing.
People talk to you in the bathroom?
Yeah.
What? That's not cool.
Yeah.
Are they older?
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah,
I'm, they think I'm you're realizing part of the, club.
The older I get, the more vocal other men are in the bathroom of just talking to me.
Maybe it's because they feel like you're getting older and it's like, this guy knows what's going on.
Do you make eye contact?
I try not to.
Okay.
Okay.
But I still talk to you.
You recognize the drummer from Ben's Folds.
Yeah, I saw him walk in. He was also on stage 20 minutes earlier.
Yeah,
so.
He had his drumsticks. He was like, playing a song.
Playing on the top of the hurdle.
Did they play All Star by Smash Mouth?
Did they put a plaque above the urinal that had his name on it?
No, he just kind of moved a cigarette butt around.
Okay, that's a specific type of eye contact.
You were paying a lot of attention.
All right, I think we've spent enough time on
scat. I'm the scat man.
Elvis is scat.
From Freeze to Keys by Mark Watson. After a 3-day rest, Tyler Thompson is back on the road again. Thompson, 31, of Schmira, Georgia, is riding his bicycle from sea to shining sea. Well, almost. He was about...
from road sign to shining road sign.
Okay, well, no, this is kind of tragic. Okay, well, almost. He was about 6 miles short of seeing the Arctic Ocean because of permit issues. Thompson is riding his bike from Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, to the Florida Keys, a near 7,000-mile journey.
Wow.
A self-proclaimed vagabond at the moment, Thompson is traveling a part of the route his parents rode a little more than 30 years ago. That journey prompted Tyler to retrace part of their journey 30-some-odd years later. First adventures. I grew up hearing a lot of stories. It was always in my head, Thompson said. His first overnight adventure was when he was in college. Using the same 1985 or 1986 Cannondale bike his dad used, he took a 250-mile trip through southern Georgia and then rode from Empire, Colorado, located west of Denver, to Yellowstone National Park. When he was in the Peace Corps, he rode throughout Croatia. This is my fourth trip and clearly the longest, Thompson said. Here we go. He left Prudhoe Bay, Alaska on June 14th, about 3,900 miles ago. Key West is another 3,000 miles. The road to Purgatory could not be as hellacious as the 414 miles of gravel and packed earth stretching between Prudhoe Bay and Living Good, Alaska. He wrote on his blog chronicling the journey. That gravel road, he said, had many vehicles break down on the side of its beaten and shattered by the rough conditions and excess speed people drove. It wasn't that bad for me, except for the physicality of it. It wasn't bad except for everything.
Except for doing it.
You know, everything that goes into riding a bicycle, you know, the physical nature.
Yeah,
I mean, that part was bad.
The pedaling part was difficult.
But mentally, I was doing okay.
Yeah, I got turned on to a couple new podcasts.
Yeah, I listened to most of them on the way.
I invented some new swear words. It is remote. There is nothing out there. The only thing out there is the pipeline and pump stations. I'm taking my time. I met two guys who are doing the exact opposite route. They were flying.
We met in the middle.
Wait. Were they flying or they're using their bikes really fast, or were they so opposite that they were in the air flying? Taking a mere fraction of the time this guy is on a bike.
It is interesting that he's doing this, but is he doing this because he wants people to know he's doing this? Like, did people do this back in olden times before there were blogs and before there were book deals?
It sounds like with his parents, they just decided they wanted to do some biking, and they probably just kind of kept going a little bit further. Oh, let's keep going.
Like Forrest Gump. He just wanted to run.
He
didn't care that anybody cared about it. He just did it to do it.
See the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it, you think this guy's doing it to see the world or write a blog? I don't mean to be overly jaded, but that's why a lot of people do a lot of things.
Yeah, there's probably a story.
So other people know that they did it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And so I'm just curious if, again, in olden times, before 24-hour news channels and blogs, if people did that kind of thing. Did people ride cross-country on a bike?
I bet they did.
Not for fun, though, right? It's part of the adventure of...
You've
got to go figure out where that is.
Yeah.
So we're just...
They were called explorers.
Yeah.
And they were on camels.
A lot of people that did it for the sense of accomplishment it would give them. I think they just didn't have the means and the wherewithal to be able to easily blog and vlog and all that crap.
Like back to Teddy Roosevelt's days. He was a man's man.
He was.
He wasn't doing it for Fox News or CNN. He was just doing it to do it, right? He was hunting all the time. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's to say that people didn't try to have adventures
in
olden times. It's just I think a 6,000-mile journey is probably something people didn't do
It would have been hard to do with the technology, too, I guess. Yeah.
Teddy busted out of that bathroom like, I just used the hell out of that urinal.
I've been there 2 hours. You won't believe the size of my scat.
Wait, how was he using the urinal?
Oh, no, sorry. I was back to the
his
bathroom.
His back was very wet.
The bathroom. I just used that. I sat on that toilet, oddly shaped toilet, for a long time and took a bath.
Teddy Roosevelt's a madman.
But nobody wrote about it.
Standing in front of urinals, shitting his pants, and then taking a bath in the toilet.
I'm a president for the new America.
I'm a man's man. Don't you write about that. I did it for me. I didn't do it for you.
That's why no other manliness can match up Teddy Roosevelt and his crazy ass.
Because he was crazy.
He was an insane person who marked his territory everywhere he went.
That's why he was lost in Yellowstone for months at a time. He was marking every tree.
Oh, yeah? And bro, you saying that Washington slept in that bed? I just took a dump all over it, rolled in it, and I'm taking that headboard.
Okay. We have two options here as the press secretary of this White House. A, we hype up Teddy Roosevelt as the manliest man that ever lived, or we just let everybody know he's insane. He's just insane.
He got there but just on the name alone, Roosevelt.
He loves hunting.
But now he's crazy. Yeah. We realize he's a nut. Yeah.
He's not cuddling bears in the caves at Yellowstone.
He's fighting them.
That bear was delicious. There was one bear left. I chased him down a tree and I ate him whole.
I nursed on that bear like a little cub.
And you wouldn't believe the size of my scat after eating a whole bear.
It's still in my pants.
It's still in my pants. I'm not even going to pull my trousers down. I'm going to walk around till it all dribbles down my ankles.
Is it just because of this fabrication we've created, or is it completely making sense that Teddy Roosevelt would also die on the toilet?
Did he? He might have.
I don't think he did, but man,
somebody
it would make
died
sense
in the
right
bathtub,
now.
Right? Didn't somebody, was that
Taft? That was
Taft didn't get out of a bathtub.
He got stuck.
Did he die in there?
No, he died somewhere. No.
He carried it with him like a turtle.
Yeah.
He was stuck on his back. Oh. You know what you measure when the other Roosevelt sits down? The size of his scat. So much scat. He clogged toilets from here to Alaska. All those raw bears.
That's how we got Alaska as a That's state. Right.
I gotta go mark some more territory.
No. He was standing in British Columbia, hung his ass over into the Pacific and
pooped on it.
And then scat out Alaska. Alaska is Teddy Roosevelt. At least that's Teddy Roosevelt's scat.
That's what that word means.
That's the story he tells, at least. Calm down, Teddy. Calm down.
There's been a lot of scat talk today. Presidential that, scat talk.
Smash mouth and scat mouth. That's what. What was that story about?
That doesn't matter.
I think we need to move on.
Oh, from freeze to keys.
Whatever story we try to tell is not going to be better than Madman Teddy Roosevelt.
Call me Teddy. Just call me Teddy. I'll be out west claiming some more territory, if you know what I mean.
Jumpstarting the Rally by Deb Holland. It's high-flying Cole Freeman's mission to keep the motorcycle industry thriving, one thrilling jump at a time.
Yeah.
There you go.
One of those stunts jump-started the opening ceremonies of the 79th Sturgis Motorcycle Rally Friday, when Freeman jumped the iconic Sturgis Main Street just a day after he had been injured preparing for the same stunt in front of the Corn Palace in Mitchell.
The Corn Palace? Not the same one.
Well, no.
It was Mitchell.
Yes. Listeners of Small Town News will recognize the Corn Palace.
And there was another president involved in that, wasn't it, that was from that area?
Maybe we shouldn't figure it out.
He walks between the rows or something like that, right?
The president?
Yeah, he was like Children of the Corn guy. He who walks behind the rows.
Sure, the corn is a lot less intimidating when you imagine like Richard Nixon or somebody walking by the rows.
I am not to be worshipped. I poop my pants for a different reason.
I was absolutely humbled to jump over the most famous road in motorcycle history, Freeman said Saturday at a news conference with Mayor Mark Cartinson. But while doing test jumps in the morning at Mitchell on Thursday, Freeman and his bike, a Harley-Davidson Road Glide, tumbled over the launch ramp in what could only be called a freak accident.
Oh.
I had just changed my bike up, and we were trying to get the suspension dialed in. it was reacting kind of weird. I took off toward the ramp, and when I got to the top of first gear and revved it out, I clicked into second. Instead, the motorcycle stayed in neutral. Freeman braked the bike but was already heading up the ramp. I got to the top and thought I was going to save it, he said. But Freeman went over the top of the handlebars, falling 8 feet to the pavement.
It was only 8 foot high ramp.
Well, he's jumping a road. And what? Okay, my tone was wrong. My tone was wrong, okay? To jump anything with a motorcycle is beyond what I can do. But, you know.
Look, no, you could probably do an 8 foot jump.
I don't know.
8 foot high ramp? Does that seem high?
Have you ever
You're jumping over an entire road, though.
Yeah,
That's
you're
what
jumping
trying to accomplish.
Over a road.
Don't you think the ramp should be more impressive?
Well, I mean, more impressive than the road. It's got to go over the road, but yeah.
I'm sure there's math involved. Bad.
That's two car widths, right? You think about the size of the ramps when they have those big shows. They're jumping over like 40 cars. You're jumping over two cars, essentially.
Yes, that's why I'm saying like, okay,
are you a two-laner, yeah.
At what point do you qualify as being a daredevil? 8 foot ramp over a road?
Seems like 8 feet.
This guy got a paper write-up.
He did. Not national news.
No.
But it's like regional news.
Yeah.
Okay, so we cut to talent manager's office. Stevie Blackwell, he is meeting with his client, the phenomenal Phil. He's delivering bad news. Phil.
Yeah.
Look, hey, great job on that jump, the motorcycle jump last week.
I worked really hard on it. I feel like I really had it dialed in there.
You did,
It felt good.
You were all over it, Phil. I got some bad news, though.
Whoa, no. Come on
now. I'm sorry. I know this was the jump that was going to put you on the map, make you an official daredevil.
Yeah.
But it turns out I checked with the qualifications board.
Yeah.
And your jump was only 7 feet high.
Yeah.
So
treacherous. Seven feet.
You can really hurt yourself. I understand that, okay? I get it, okay? But the truth is, you do not qualify as a daredevil unless it's 8 feet tall.
Come on, that's BS.
I'm with you. As of right now, you are merely a devil. That is it. There is no dare.
Oh, okay. So you're telling me I got to jump an 8 foot ramp?
I mean, if you want to do something more than 6-year-old birthday parties, yeah.
Cut to 6 weeks later, and Phenomenal Phil has realized that he'll never really be a daredevil. He switched careers. He's now a competitive eater. Phil.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I got bad news.
What? No,
we're going to have to cut you from the circuit.
What are you talking about? I ate 6 pieces of pie.
You did. 6 pieces of pie, and you followed up with 42 hot dogs in 7 minutes.
I'm so sick.
Right. But in order to be a competitive eater, you got to eat 8 pieces of pie and 50 hot dogs in 6 minutes. You're just an eater. You're just an eater. You're just going to be a fat guy.
Who's making this rule?
This is a sport. In order to be considered a competitive eater, as opposed to just an eater, you're going to have to meet those marks.
I grew stretch marks.
Yes.
In 1 week.
Yes. I know.
That's a lot of food.
It's a lot of food. You should not have done that if you weren't going to be prepared to go all
the way. I can't eat anymore.
That's why we're cutting you.
I feel terrible.
You look terrible. You look like maybe you need to get rid of some of that food that you ate a week ago.
I do.
Why are you holding on to it?
I'm scared of what other rule there might be out there.
You just need to change careers. I'm so sorry.
I feel like the gold ring is always just out of reach for me.
It is.
Well, I'm not going to eat any more food. And I
think that's
now
wise.
I'm too heavy to jump any higher. I'd be lucky to get a 1 foot ramp at this point.
If you eat more food, nobody's going to care. You need to go back to what you're good at.
Well, the only thing I've ever been good at.
Yeah.
Toilets.
Toilets?
Toilets.
What? Making toilets?
I make toilet.
What, you make one toilet? Did you say I make? Hold on. I'm so sorry to laugh at your dreams. Did you say you
make toilet?
I'm working
really hard on this.
One toilet?
I make one toilet. I've got one toilet that I made.
Well, you said I make toilet. Are you still working on it?
Yes. And when it's done, it's going to be gorgeous.
We cut back to the offices of Stevie Blackwell. Ah, if it isn't a phenomenal Phil, right?
Yeah.
It's been too long,
hey,
buddy. I hope you found your calling.
I have not.
Ah, damn it.
I keep trying. I ate a lot, as you can see.
You are whiter.
Yes. On the way here, 3 people jumped over me.
Wait a second. Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
that I need to go to the bathroom.
No. I'm thinking, hold it in, okay?
Oh.
If you can't be the one that jumps high, you can be the one that makes people jump high.
Oh, okay. I think I can do that.
Hey.
We cut to the county fair 2 months later where
Okay, Phil, I know it's been 2 months. You haven't used the bathroom, right?
I have not, stopped eating.
That's important.
This manager is leading Phil over to the golden toilet in the middle of the street where the two ramps will allow a true daredevil to jump over this fat man.
Okay, I'm so sorry. That wasn't flattering at all, but you got to trust me on this,
heavy.
Phil.
Call me heavy.
Phil, we're two birds with one stone, buddy, okay? We got like three of them here. Number one, we got the biggest toilet. Number two, you're going to create the biggest scat. Number three, someone's going to jump over you with a motorcycle. Okay, there's no way you're not going to be in the history books.
It is truly the epitome of the American dream.
A man
who fails again, and then finds his passion making toilet.
Look, I'm just saying, Phil, at the end of this day, your name's going to be in so many ledgers. All right.
Do you think somebody will come and tour my house?
Or want to poop in it?
After what you're about to do in the middle of this street? Probably not.
Stevie, you've never steered me wrong. Here, I sit on top of a golden toilet in the middle of Sturgis, South Dakota.
The main event will begin as soon as Smash Mouth has led us in the national Tool anthem.
All that glitters is gold. Yeah, this ended. I love that. You've never steered me wrong. You prevented me from using the bathroom for 2 months. You've never steered me wrong.
But now that the cameras are on, it's time.
Man. Yeah, last time we really dug into the slutty Supergirl, and this week it's just poop.
A lot of poop.
Just so much poop.
A lot of poop.
A whole lot of backdoor.
A lot.
Too much, you maybe.
Maybe.
You don't have to worry it like that.
Look, we make toilet.
Bunch of small town news.
You've just tolerated another episode of Small Town News, a production of Small Town News, LLC.
Today's episode of Small Town News was inspired by the Black Hills Pioneer of Spearfish, South Dakota, and stories written by an unnamed author, Lacey Conrad Pearson, Mark Watson, Lacey Peterson, Deb Holland, and Kasia Swisher.
Episodes are performed and produced by Keith Boyd, George Oliver, Neil Oliver, and Craig Ramey.
Research by Dr. Jessica Saxon.
Music performed by George Oliver.
This episode was recorded at Teddy Roosevelt's Urinal in Newburgh, North Carolina.
Add your name to the ledger now.
Write it in pee.
Don't flush. Just swirl that cigarette butt around. Small Town News is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon, Facebook Podcasts, and your grandmother's gramophone. Like what you hear, leave us a review and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram for behind-the-scenes photos, exclusive updates, and opportunities to share your favorite Small Town News.
Thanks for joining us.
And remember...
But the media men beg to differ, judging by the hole in the satellite picture. Oh, wait. No, this one's more appropriate. The ice we skate is getting pretty thin. The water's warming up, so you might as well swim. The world's on fire. How about yours? That's the way I like it, and I'll never get bored.
Ow.
That whole song, that's not a...
But you know it from the original, not from Shrek.
Oh, I was on the ground floor. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of those you can't get out of your head.
Can't.
It's really just the opening that gets in my head. I don't know all the lyrics, and I'm okay with that.
Well, there's two of them. There's Superstar, and then what's the other one? Walking on the Sun?
Yeah.
Is that their other one?
Might as well be walking on the sun.
I'm ashamed because, you know, that I was in high school when Smash Mouth was in their heyday, and I was very much I love ska music. Oh, did y'all hear the Mighty Mighty Bosstones broke up?
Wait, they were still together?
They were.
Dickie has been the announcer for Jimmy Kimmel for like 20 years.
I'm sorry. My apologies. I need to reorder the way I'm making these announcements. Hey, did you guys know that Mighty Mighty Bosstones was still together?
What?
Hey, did you know that Mighty Mighty Bosstones recently finally broke up?
Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah.
wait, really?
I assume they were broken up.
Literally, within the past month, they broke up.
Wait, but what were they doing before that, though?
They were sconning up across the USA, baby.
I don't know. Were they?
Yes.
Well, so that one song that was so good, and now there were more than one, but that one that I remember was the impression that I get.
Okay, first off, you say the one that you remember. It's the one everyone remembers.
Right, and I'm part of that group.
You know what? Okay. just shy of Animal from the Muppets.
Yeah.
That was a great. I have that album still, and that is in my one of my top albums.
That's a great song.
It's got great songs.
But are there other songs?
Yeah, it's an album with one song. No,
but honestly, they sound like that one, right?
Of course they do. It's like everything's got trumpets.
So used to have this thing about Jerry Lee Lewis, and he would say. Do you like Jerry Lee Lewis? I'd be like, sure. I like one song, Great Balls of Fire. He's like, well, all the songs sound like that one. But if you like that one song, you like all of his songs. That's kind of like Boston.
No,
right?
It really, well, yeah. I mean, that's a lot of musicians, especially back in the day. Like I listened to the 50 station and things like that.
Yeah.
And like, so Chuck Berry will come on. Every Chuck Berry song sounds the same. I mean, it's great stuff, but it's like they all blend together.
But that's the
something something rock and roll. Bah, 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 bah,
bah, bah, bah, that's the double-edged sword.
You say some words right here
of being successful, because you have a great album that comes out. Everybody loves that album, and they love that sound. So if you do another album that sounds like that, you'd think they'd all be happy, and maybe they will for the second album. But the third album, if you make another album that sounds like those other two, then you're derivative or repetitive, whatever.
You can't win either way.
Right. So if you change your sound, oh my God, why'd you do that?
I know.
You don't sound like yourself anymore.
Well, there's a line there too. I mean, like, you know, talking about like Chuck Berry and things like that. It's like, you know, rock and roll was very much in its heyday and coming out. And so it was, they were delivering an expectation. I can understand that. But then you get people like, we've talked about the Beastie Boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They did their thing in the 80s. And then they had a self-realization moment where it was like, hey, we need to evolve. They took a break. They learned instruments. They came back and they were something new. But the flavor was always the same, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Like you don't listen to the two different eras of Beastie Boys and be like, wow, it's so different. They just, they evolved. And it's the difference between staying in front of the urinal with a shit in your pants. Which I think we can all
Wait, is that the Boston's or is that Jerry Lee Lewis?
No. Let's get this straight.
Who is the analogy? Standing in front of the urinal with a poop
poison
in their pants.
Okay, like Poison or Whitesnake or something like that. They're playing the festival circuits, you know, in the poop in their pants.
They probably quite literally have stood in a urinal with poop in their pants.
I just want to make one thing straight right now. I am not
here. I go again on my own.
That's funny.
Make a toilet on my pants. It's on my toes.
It's I make toilet.
Girls leave me alone. But I made up my mind. I can't afford a new pair of pants. Here I go again.
We cut back to Neil.
What is happening?
You guys did the outro. Why are you still talking?
Mighty, mighty Boston's rule.
That's the and remember.